Chapters 4, 5, 6, and 7 of the book of Job. Some of you are already thinking, good luck. Question, how many of you, when you read the book of Job, have difficulty? Because it is somewhat of a difficult book to read. Tim Keller writes, no other book in the Bible, to my mind, in all of ancient literature, faces the questions of evil and suffering with such emotional and dramatic realism, yet also with such intellectual and philosophical deftness. Obviously, the main theme is that of, get this, innocent suffering. Why do so many very good people have a disproportionate number of afflictions and tragedies, while many dishonest, selfish, and greedy people have comfortable lives? The book of Job is uniquely balanced in its treatment of this theme. It treats neither abstractly nor just viscerally. The problem of evil is examined through one man's vividly described agony. That's Job. Job's agony was swift and it was severe. And as we read through those first two chapters, we wince because we see a man just crushed under the situations that he was faced with and not knowing of that heavenly council meeting where God was in the midst of the orchestration of those events and Satan asking for permission to attack Job, which he did. In this book, we see Job's endurance. We see his patience. We see his humility. Of these, he is an example. And as you see Job's example, it inspires us and at times it rebukes us. Job, serving the secret purposes of heaven and not knowing a thing about it. In this book, we see his suffering in the first two chapters. And then chapter 3, the floodgates open. And we looked at it last week. We saw his lament. And what was it at the end of his lament when we read these words? For the thing that I fear has come upon me, that which I dread befalls me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, but trouble comes. What is it that Job feared so much? Here's what it is. It was the silence of God in the midst of his hurt. It was the silence and seeming abandonment by God in the midst of his hurt. Well, we come to the end of chapter 3 and we think, well, his suffering might be over. His struggles might be over. Douglas O'Donnell in his commentary on Job says, we might think that the trial of Job is over, but alas, there is one more, the toughest. Satan slithers away while his closest friends cozy up. And that's really what happens. Because from now till up till chapter 38, it's dialogue. It's back and forth. We have three friends with the addition of one later on. We have Eliphaz, we have Bildad, we have Zophar. And then later on we have one by the name of Elihu, who step into the midst of the situation. At first we heard that they came in to bring comfort and sympathy. They really bring anything but that. So now we look at the life of Job. And we look at these back and forths. Because right now, Job is about to be blindsided. That's what takes place. First of all, I want to share with you a tweet that was brought to my attention this week. Tweet, for those of you that don't know, is what happens when you have Twitter and send out a message. It's social media. Don't ask me to explain it. But here's how the tweet begins. You gotta be kidding me, in quotes. Then the explanation. This is a description of Job reading the Facebook status updates from people complaining about their lives. You've got to be kidding me. We've left Job. He is still in the ash heap. He's still mourning. He's still mourning his loss of his family, of his health, of his wealth. and now he's about to be blindsided. Job's friends heard his lament in chapter 3, and to put it frankly, they were not impressed. In the preface to the 1560 edition of the Geneva Bible, we read these words. These friends came unto him under the pretense of consolation, and yet they tormented him more than did all his affliction. More than all his affliction. We have friends stepping into the mix and really trying to counsel Job without context, without understanding God's purposes, or without understanding God's working in Job's life and what was being fleshed out in his life. The three friends, and this is a fast overview of all of the dialogues between Job and his friends. Job's friends' view of suffering came from a rigidly orthodox position. It was cold and it was frigid. It was misapplied. It was a cause and effect theology, is what they really believed in. They really believed in, if you are suffering, you're kind of getting what you deserved. Or at least, there's probably something in your situation that has caused it. In Christopher Ashe's commentary on Job, which I commend to each and every one of you, the three friends' system of belief can be summarized by these three statements. One, God is absolutely in control. Number two, God is absolutely fair and just. Number three, therefore he always punishes wickedness and blesses righteousness. Always, and soon, and certainly in this life. If we were to ever to do otherwise, he would necessarily be unjust. So if God didn't, in this life, address the issue of evil, then he would be unjust, and God is not unjust. That's what the friends believed. That's what the friends understood. Therefore, if I suffer, what's the logical conclusion? Or if everything is going wrong in my life, if everything is falling apart like it did to Job, what is the therefore? Therefore is, Job, you must have sinned and they're being punished by God. That was in the mind of the three friends as they came to Job. What do we learn from these chapters? What do we learn from the chapters that are ahead of us this morning? Here's what we learn. We learn what not to say to a suffering believer. We learn what not to say to a suffering believer. Again, Tim Keller writes these words in his book, Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering. The message of Job's friends is clear. Job wouldn't be suffering like this unless he failed to pray, unless he failed to trust, or unless he failed to obey God in some way. God would never be so unjust as to let all this happen unless Job had done something to deserve it. So if Job wants to be restored, he simply needs to confess all known sin and get his life straight. Oh, if it were only that simple. Because the amazing thing about the book of Job is that God himself confirms the fact that Job is a righteous man, upright, blameless, a man of integrity, and yet this suffering happens to him for reasons unknown to him and known only to God. We need to look very quickly at Eliphaz, however you want to pronounce his name. He's a counselor who misses the mark. And then we need to look at Job, because Job is wearing his feelings. He's expressing himself with honesty and with candidness and with vulnerability. And he feels betrayed by his friends and by God. Let's look at the text. Eliphaz speaks. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, if one ventures a word with you, will you be impatient? Remember where they are. They're still at the ash heap. Yet You can keep from speaking. Who can keep from speaking? Behold, you have instructed many. You have strengthened the weak hands. Your words have upheld him who is stumbling. And you have made firm feeble knees. What's he doing? He's starting out on a very sympathetic and encouraging note. Job, you've been this to people. You have been there for people. And sometimes, folks, when a person is suffering or struggling, that's a good way to have a conversation. You know, you've been such a blessing. You have walked with so many different people. I remember a friend who was a missionary, lost their five-year-old. Just suddenly, it was an accident. And I remember, what do you say when you go up to this friend at the funeral home after a tragedy of that sort? I had no clue. And I walked up to him, and I just looked at him. I shook his hand, and I hugged him. I said, Malcolm, I have so appreciated your ministry. I have so appreciated how much of a blessing you have been to me. That's a good way to start. I wish Eliphaz had stopped there. Because the first few verses, he's actually saying, you have instructed, you have strengthened, you have upheld. Verse 5, but now it has come to you, and you are impatient. Job, you're not really as patient as you have been proclaiming to so many other people. It touches you and you are dismayed. Job, you're really not practicing what you are preaching. Is not your fear of God your confidence and the integrity of your ways your hope? Remember, here's where it goes south again. Who that was innocent ever perished? And where were the upright cut off? Implied, that doesn't happen. Job, something is being missed here. And I think you're missing it. As I have seen, now he's calling in the big guns. This is by personal observation, Job. Those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. This is someone who has turned from a very encouraging note to an incredibly harsh tone. His theological orthodoxy has become very cold and rigid and inflexible. By the breath of God they perish, and by the blast of his anger they are consumed. The roar of the lion, the voice of the fierce lion, the teeth of the young lions. Remember, this is poetry, are broken. The strong lion perishes for lack of prey. The cubs of the lionesses are scattered. Now a word was brought to me stealthily, so this is now upping his authority. First it was by personal observation, now it's the I have a dream moment. My ear received the whisper of it. Amid thoughts from visions in the night, when deep sleep falls upon men, dread came upon me and trembling, which made all my bones shake. A spirit gilded past my face. The hair of my flesh stood up. Do you see the picture? Do you see the imagery? It stood still, but I could not discern its appearance. A form was before my eyes. There was silence, and then I heard a voice. Can mortal man be right before God? Can a man be pure before his Maker? Now he's talking back to Job, and he's relaying to him a message. Job, who are you to exalt yourself above God? Verse 18, even his servants he puts no trust, and his angels he charges with error. How much more those who dwell in houses of clay? That's us, people of mortality, whose foundation is in the dust, who are crushed like a moth between morning and evening. They are beaten to pieces. They perish forever without anyone regarding it. Is not their tent cord plucked up from within them? Do they not die, and that without wisdom? Call now, he says again to Job. Call now, is there anyone who will answer you? To which of the holy ones will you turn? Surely vexation kills the fool, and jealousy slays the simple. I have seen the fool taking root, but suddenly I cursed his dwelling. His children are far from safety. He just said that to Job? Remember, he's talking to Job. This poetic soliloquy is being directed at Job, so the barbs and the hooks you feel in it is for Job's benefit from Eliphaz. His children are far from safety. They are crushed in the gate, and there is no one to deliver them. The hungry eat his harvest, and he takes it even out of the thorns. And the thirsty pant after his wealth, for affliction does not come from the dust, nor does trouble sprout from the ground. Job, this trouble you're facing is not coming from nowhere. It's coming from somewhere. And implied, I think you know exactly where it's coming from. But man is born to trouble as the sparks fly upward. As for me, Job, here it is, I would seek God, and to God I would commit my cause, who does great things and unsearchable, marvelous things without number. He gives rain on the earth and sends waters in the field. He sets on high those who are lowly, and those who mourn are lifted to safety. He frustrates the devices of the crafty so that their hands achieve no success. He catches the wise in their own craftiness, and the schemes of the wily are brought to a quick end. Look down to verse 17. Behold, blessed is the one whom God reproves. Therefore, despise not the discipline of the Almighty. Job, I think here's what's happening. I think the reason you're going through what you're going through is God is disciplining you. Now, how did Eliphaz know that? Was he a part of some secret council meeting where all of this information was brought to him? No, he was clueless as to why Job was suffering. And we don't find any questions in here so that he could better understand from Job's perspective what was going on. He simply steps in. Folks, there's a lot of shame in these chapters. And the shame is being loaded from Eliphaz to Job. Just be good. You need to go to God because God is chastening you. And you need to address that very quickly, Job. Interesting, Paul Tripp writes about Christian counseling. He says, counseling is the ministry of the word from believer to believer in the context of what God is doing in that person's life. And Eliphaz missed that. His words were words of self-righteousness and accusation. Enter Job, chapter 6, verse 2. Oh, that my vexation were weighed, and all my calamity laid in the balances. Now he's going to try to describe what he's going through to his friend. For then it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. The calamity that he is feeling, the weight of the struggle that he is feeling is heavy upon him. For the arrows of the Almighty, verse 4, are in me, and my spirit drinks their poison. The terrors of God are arrayed against me. He's hurting, and what he is facing is like arrows being shot into his body. Look at verse 5. Does the wild donkey bray when he has grass, or the ox low when he's over his fodder? Answer, any farmers out here? Do they? No, they're just chowing down. It's like people at the all-you-can-eat buffet. There's not a heck of a lot of talking going on, but there is a lot of chomping. His point here is Job's friends, their words here are almost like they leave him hungry. He's speaking of the words of his friends. Can that which is tasteless be eaten without salt? Or is there any taste in the juice of the mallow? My appetite refuses to touch them. He's referring to the words of his friend. They had been that harsh and that painful to Job. Verse 8, oh, that I might have my request, and that God will fulfill my hope. That it would please God to crush me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off. This would be my comfort, I would even exult in pain unsparing. Then he comes, he's not being defensive here in verse 10. He's simply stating the expression of his heart. For I have not denied the words of God. I have not denied the words of the Holy One. But I'm struggling, Job says, verse 11. What is my strength that I should wait? And what is my end that I should be patient? Is my strength the strength of stones? Or is my flesh bronze? Have I any help in me when resources are driven from me? I've said this as before when we started the book of Job. When you read the book of Job, you have to feel it. You have to feel what's going on. It sounds as though Job is a man just bleeding. And his friends coming to him, not with velvet, but with a hammer. He who withholds kindness from a friend forsakes the fear of the Almighty. Job is now speaking back to Eliphaz. Eliphaz, you are the one who has withheld kindness. And you are the one who forsakes the fear of the Almighty. Now he describes his counselors, his friends. My brothers are treacherous as a torrent bed, as torrential streams that pass away. When we were in Israel one afternoon, we were having lunch at a Bedouin tent. And they had the first massive hailstorm that they've had there in 45 years. And in Israel, one of the things you come to realize is that when you're driving by, you see these dry riverbeds, or also called wadis. Everywhere you go, you see these dry riverbeds. It takes just moments of heavy rain for these little dry, great places to run or to walk, riverbeds, to become a torrential flood. In just moments, there were two people swept away, not far from where we were, who were walking along a riverbed. That's what Job is getting at. And that's how he's describing the words of his friends. He's describing their words sort of coming on nice and friendly, and then all of a sudden like a raging river sweeping him away. This is what Job is feeling like. For you, verse 21, have now become nothing. You see my calamity and are afraid. Have I said, make me a gift, or from your wealth offer a bribe for me, or deliver me from the adversary's hand, or redeem me from the hand of the ruthless? Verse 24, teach me and I will be silent. Make me understand how I've gone astray. Job, again, is not being defensive. He's saying, I would like some clarity from you. Eliphaz, I would simply like to know where you have seen me stray. You point it out, I'll deal with it. Otherwise, in short, go away. How forceful are upright words? But what does reproof from you reprove? Do you think you can reprove words when the speech of a despairing man is wind? You would even cast lots over the fatherless and bargain over your friend. But now please look at me, for I will not lie to your face. Please turn and let no injustice be done. Turn now. My vindication is at stake. Is there any injustice in my tongue? Cannot my palate discern the cause of this calamity? Job saying, I'd just like to know. I would just like you to be honest with me. And then in chapter 7, Job is now turning words of protest, in a sense, to God. At the first part of the chapter 7, verses 1 to 10, he looks at God and he says, and I'm going to encourage you to read this on your own. Chapter 7, verse 1 to 10, he says, why does my life matter? He is a guy who is hurting, and he's now calling out to God. He's not distancing himself from his God. He's looking at the suffering that he has been through. He's looking at the reality of who God is, and he's saying, why does my life even matter? Ever been there? Ever known anybody who's there? And then in verse 11 to the end of the chapter, upon hearing no response from God, upon this deafening silence of God, he simply says, God, just leave me alone. I don't want to talk. So, what can we learn from this account. Number one, we can learn that there are times when others' words make troubles worse. If you listen to the counsel of Eliphaz, you will realize he really doesn't get it. He's not understanding Job. He's not coming alongside of his friend and listening. He's definitely not understanding that God may have greater purposes than what are even evident. But he still comes in and talks. And his speaking, again, I encourage you to read chapters 4 and 5 again. His words to Job are filled with assumption. He's assuming this. He is assuming that. Do you know what happens when we build what we say to people on assumption? It takes understanding and insight and drops them, because it never happens. Assumption does that. It leads us to conclusions, but not any conclusions that are based on truth. It's like the person who says, "Don't confuse me with the facts. My mind is already made up." When we assume something, our hearing is blocked. We're simply trying to formulate the next thing we are going to say. Not listening to what the person is saying. We are simply, we've already made up our mind, we've already made our judgment call. And now we are building everything from that point onward onto our assumptions. And we're not really listening to the person in what they're... Could you have imagined what would have happened differently had Eliphaz really listened to Job in chapter 3? Do you think his response in chapters 4 and 5 might have been a little different? Listen to Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. "Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know they are doing evil." Then he says in verse 2, "Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. For God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few." Wouldn't it have been a great thing had Eliphaz taken those words, or at least the principle of those words, to heart? Wouldn't it have been good, instead of stepping in and trying to give unfounded counsel, uncaring counsel, counsel that was built upon assumption, counsel that was built upon his experience and his, I'm using quotation marks here, his dream. I said that for anybody that might be listening on a CD. On his dreams. Wouldn't it have been good had he spent some more time just listening to Job? I don't know if he realizes that sometimes the words of others can simply make matters worse. Who are you ministering to these days? Who are you spending time with these days? Who is going through times of struggle? Do you know what they need more than counsel built upon assumptions? They need your ears. They need for you to be a person who listens. Listen to Proverbs 18, verse 13. "If one gives an answer before he hears, it is his folly and shame." It's so important to be people who listen. It's so important to be people who listen and are cautious at the counsel we would give. Not to base it on assumption. Not to base it on, "Well, I think," and so on. We need to be people who listen. James chapter 1. "Know this, my beloved brothers. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. As you read the tone of these back and forth dialogues between Job and his friends, the tone is constantly changing. There is an escalation in the tone. The sarcasm starts to go up. Have you ever seen that in any personal relationships? There's not listening, there's assumption, and then the sarcasm starts to go up. Can anybody relate? Or am I the only one putting my hand up? Thank you, Bill, I see that hand. But we need to be so careful. We need to be so careful because words are not just words. Words are important. And how we come alongside someone who is struggling and suffering is so vitally important. See, the counsel of Eliphaz was not only based on assumption, it was also driven by shame. Intentional or not, the counsel of Eliphaz was shame-based. For one reason or another, he tried to shame Job into owning something that really wasn't his. Look at chapter 4. You have instructed, you have upheld, but now, you're not practicing what you are supposed to believe, Job. He does the same in chapter 5. And do you know what this shame-driven counsel does? It drives Job further and further into grief and anguish. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 18. There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. That's what our rash words can be like. Do you realize the power of words? What does James tell us about words? It tells us that the tongue, the use of the tongue, the way we speak, the way we communicate to others, is like a little rudder on a ship. Not very big in comparison to the rest of the ship, but boy, it can turn that thing really well. And it affects everything it comes in contact with. What we learn from these chapters in Job, first of all, is that there are times when others' words make our troubles worse. Number two, we learn that there are times when God's ways only make us more confused. That was hard to say, but I had to say it. Don't expect to understand everything when it happens. We don't have to have PhDs to get this. There are times when God's ways only make us more confused. We don't get it. We don't understand. I want you to do an exercise. I want you to practice it. I want you to do it when you get home. I want you to practice it with a friend or with your spouse. I would like you to go home and practice it in front of the mirror. In fact, I'd like you to do a selfie with it. I would like you to post it on Facebook or Instagram. Are you ready? It's called a shrug. Ready? Do that. Come on. You'll feel better if you do it. And if not, I'm just going to stand up here until you do it. Shrug. You going to do it? Shrug. I want you to follow it up with these words. Out loud. I don't know. Practice that regularly, alone, or with someone. Shrug. I don't know. I really don't know. I can't tell you why this happened. Trying to bring explanation, trying to bring full clarity to the suffering we face. You know, God's ways sometimes just make us confused, and we are confused, and there are times we just don't know. Do you want to know the great news? God never shrugs. God never shrugs. Shrugging and omnipotence are inconsistent with each other. God never shrugs. God is saying, into your situation and mine, I know exactly why this has happened. I know the way you take, and I know how long you will be there, and I know what will be the end result. He has his hand on the thermostat, and he has his eye on the timer. Shrugging and omnipotence are incompatible. And in the midst of your shrugging, not God's, God is saying, good, good for you. In the midst of this mystery, rely upon me. Trust me. That's what this message of Job is all about. God has never promised that he would inform us ahead of time of his plan. He's only told us that he has one. God never shrugs. He is never caught off guard as to why what happened happens. Ultimately, it is for our good and his glory. He knows the confusion comes is because we don't. That's why we shrug and we go, I don't know. Sometime, come up to me with a very deep and a difficult question and ask me that question. And don't be surprised if I look you right in the eye and go, I don't know. But there is one thing I do know. I do know with absolute certainty that the death of Jesus Christ, God's Son, was not in vain. I know without the shadow of, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that his death on the cross for you was perfectly capable of dealing with your sin problem and paying the debt that you owed that you could never pay. I am perfectly certain that if you trust him, he will forgive you. Yeah, amen. And that he holds a place for you in his family by his side for all of eternity. I know that for certain. I know that life is hard. I know there is a lot of confusion. I know that there is a lot of struggle. I know that there are a lot of shrugs followed by, I don't know. But one day, there will be no more shrugs. There will be no more I don't knows. Those will be replaced by, now I know. Job finally reaches a place where he can rest. The questions are not answered. The whys are not answered. And Job, I'm sure, still shrugged and said, I don't know. But we come to chapter 23 of Job and we read these words. Yet he knows the way I have taken. And when he has tested me, I will emerge as pure gold. My feet have followed in his tracks. I have kept to his way and have not turned aside. I have not departed from the command of his lips. I have treasured the words from his mouth more than my daily food. And Job, while he still didn't have a clear answer as to the why, he still had to shrug and say, I don't know. He found peace. And he found peace to move on, even in his darkness. Lord, today, we are so grateful that our God knows our context. We're so grateful that even when folks don't understand, folks try to help with sometimes weak words, sometimes insensitive words, in many cases even uncaring words, we can lean hard upon a God who never changes, who fully knows our way, and is testing and trying us to the ultimate end, that he is glorified in all things. Help us to trust him this day. We pray these things in Christ's powerful name. Amen.